This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Gene Purcell. The Wisconsin Legislative Audit Bureau today released a long-awaited report on the state's Government Accountability Board. The audit cites problems with how the GAB oversees campaign finance laws, lobbying rules, and ethics laws.
The GAB oversees Wisconsin's election, campaign finance, lobbying, and code of ethics laws. It's faced criticism from the Republican-controlled legislature over its handling of the 2012 recall election and a recent John Doe investigation into Governor Scott Walker's election campaign.
Here to talk more about this story is Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter Sean Johnson. Sean, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I want to start out with a little bit of a history lesson here. The GAB has only been around for a very short period of time, and the Legislative Audit Bureau, of course, does regular financial audits of state agencies. But this audit was requested by members of the legislature, is that right?
This audit was requested by, yes, members of the legislature, in particular Republican members of the legislature, who have been critical of the Government Accountability Board and, you know, even prior to today's audit, have had some interest in changing it or, you know, possibly eliminating it.
So the audit was released. There are lots and lots of findings we've been hearing about, and a lot of them, why don't you just talk about them? Because it seems on the one hand that they're sort of serious. They're, you know, they're missing records, unable to locate, processes to do things and things of that nature. How serious in the whole do you think that these things are?
Well, I mean, I think Republicans are definitely going to seize on them, and they already have today. I mean, you saw as soon as this audit came out, Republican leaders in both houses sent out press releases saying these confirm what we've always suspected. There needs to be change here. On the other hand, I think the state's election agency, the Government Accountability Board, would say, okay, these are areas that we need to improve, sure, and this audit was good, it was fair. But if you look at the big picture, over this period, over the period during which we were audited, we had all these recall elections, we had a statewide recount, we had a new voter ID law, we had redistricting, we had lawsuits filed against us, and we had criminal investigations. And, you know, life went on. People didn't freak out about the elections being mismanaged or anything like that. So as you look at how serious it is, those are kind of some of the cases that are going to be made by the parties.
Now, in his response, the head of the GAB, Kevin Kennedy, said a couple of things. He spoke directly to those issues that you cite there, the workload over the past few years. But he also pointed to a couple issues of resources, specifically staffing of the GAB and some challenges they've had in that realm.
Yeah, and I mentioned that. I had a chance to mention that to Assembly Speaker Robin Voss today, Voss being one of the most outspoken critics of the board. And he said, you know, that is something they should have broached with the legislature. It doesn't give them opportunity. It doesn't give them the chance or the right to not follow state statute. I mean, essentially what this audit is saying is that in a couple areas, state law says the GAB has to do something. The GAB, because of its workload, because of its resource issues, decided to prioritize other tasks, for example, running the statewide recall elections or statewide recount. And so you know, some of the findings of the audit, for example, that the GAB didn't conduct its own audits, they're called, or reviews of whether people serving out felony sentences may have voted. I mean, the audit's not saying that we have widespread felon voting in Wisconsin. It's saying that these regular reviews weren't conducted for, you know, a few years. And when they were conducted, the GAB said that they referred 33 of them to district attorneys for further investigation. Another thing that the audit found is that state law requires the GAB to you know, promulgate several rules, which is a wonky way of saying they have to come up with these rules for stuff like how to train chief election inspectors and special registration deputies. And then when you promulgate those rules, they go to the legislature for the legislature's review. The GAB came up with guidelines for how to do this stuff, but they didn't go through this formal rule promulgation process. And so legislators are going to seize on that. They're going to say that you're trying to cut us out of the process and run on your own. But, you know, in terms of what those rules might ultimately say. They might look very similar to what the GAB has been, you know, telling clerks for years now, but it's a procedural thing, and legislators don't like being cut out of the process.
Now, as you look at the audit and the audit response, you see all the recommendations from the Legislative Audit Bureau, and there are many of them. And then Kevin Kennedy responds to every single audit recommendation, and in some of them he says, yep, we're going to go ahead and do this. Other ones, the responses are a bit longer. My question is, what happens now? The findings are out, the responses have been made. What happens to this audit? Is it just talked about in the news, or is there something more formal after this that gets followed up on?
Well, they're going to have a public hearing on the findings. That'll be the next formal step, and that'll happen sometime in January. And so they'll have a chance to sit down and talk to Kevin Kennedy, the director of the board, and legislators can ask him questions. And if this were, you know, a few years ago, or if this were a situation where you had split control in government, it might be a situation where, you know, that the legislature goes through and acts on these recommendations, or the board independently acts upon these recommendations, and we kind of go on and we forget about this audit. But, I mean, changing the GAB or getting rid of the GAB is something that Republicans had already prioritized. You know, I mean, Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald has said he wants to go back to a system like Wisconsin used to have under the old elections board, when partisans really had more control over the process. And right now, you know, the partisans who are running thing in Wisconsin state government are Republicans. So, you know, I think that's what you'll be watching next session, is not necessarily the response to this audit, but how it's used to achieve goals that Republicans wanted to achieve anyway.
And one of the other things that was brought up in the audit by Kevin Kennedy was the issue of staffing at the Government Accountability Board. And what he talked about was that a lot of the staff positions there are not permanent positions. They are project positions. And as I understand it, those positions are due to expire sometime like in the next fiscal year. And he's worried that a lot of these folks that are working at the GAB are sort of insecure about what their futures look like, and it's putting additional pressure on there. Is that part of this whole mix too?
Yeah. I mean, if you have all these demands, as the board has in recent years, and I mean, I know they've had a lot of demands, because I think any reporter that's covering state government has spent a lot of time at the Government Accountability Board in the last several years. They've just been in the thick of it over and over again, because of all the elections and all the election-related news that we've had and events. So that takes staff and that takes time, as Kevin Kennedy is laying out. The challenge that he's going to have making the case for that staff going forward is, you know, Wisconsin is running a budget deficit of $2.2 billion. The GAB is already unpopular with Republicans who are running the state legislature. And now you have Governor Walker's staff. I mean, the governor had previously said that this is something that just really wasn't on his radar. He's now saying after this audit, well, he wants to take a look at it too. He wants to look at some type of reform of a Government Accountability Board. So definitely a tough pitch to make for the GAB here as the days go forward. But I mean, I think they're gonna be pointing out to the legislature, look at the big picture here. Look at the elections that we've run without really a hitch. And look at what people in other states are saying about the Government Accountability Board being a model for the way you should run elections. And, you know, you can expect to hear a lot of that over the next few months.
And so any more, we've mentioned a few issues in this audit, the results. Are there any big other items that rise to that jump into your head as something we ought to mention before we go? Or was it more just the sort of the sheer number of them? Because it did seem to me that there were quite a few recommendations.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't. Yeah, I mean, there are definitely recommendations in there, quite a few, where the GAB could make changes. I mean, I think the big thing is that there are laws. This is what Republicans are going to seize on, that there are laws that require the GAB to do stuff like audits to see if felons may have voted, or another thing that the audit found was that you have uneven assessment of campaign finance violations. not even abiding by the GAB's own regulations for that. You have situations like that where the GAB was sort of using its own discretion at times to run things. I mean, that's kind of the overlying theme in all this, is that the GAB was using discretion, and that sometimes that meant putting off stuff that by law it has to do.
Well, Sean, it sounds like we'll have plenty more to talk about with this story in the coming months.
All right. Thanks, Gene.
Sean Johnson is WPR State Government Reporter.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Gene Purcell. 2014 has been a good year for Wisconsin-made music. The Baraboo band Fox and, of course, Milwaukee's Field Report have been getting a lot of international attention as they tour behind critically acclaimed albums and national TV appearances.
And there's a lot of homegrown music to go around. Here to share some of his favorite songs by Wisconsin artists this year is Scott Gordon, editor of ToneMadison.com. Scott, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, let's kick it off here with an R&B track. Tell us about the Madison native known as Mr. Jackson.
So this is probably one of the younger and lesser known people we're gonna talk about. But this is a guy named Ethan Jackson, and he just released an album called The Golden Hour Groove Session, and he sings, he plays a lot of synth stuff, and he creates these beats. And the idea of the album is that he wants people to use it to accompany the golden hours in their lives, whether that's some big event or just kind of having a nice day. And he has this really kind of funky and kind of eccentric R&B, and it has this very sincere, effusive feel to it all throughout, even though it's a little bit off the wall. And it's also worth mentioning he's collaborated with a filmmaker here in Madison on a couple of music videos that are really insane and really interesting.
Right. So if we're having an especially great day, we might want to listen to this track. It's called Mr. L.
Miss L.
Ms.
Sorry.
L.
Now, Miss L. You know you can be real. Miss L, you're quite the lady. Can't keep you super close. You like to work in.
Okay, nice mellow groove there. I can see that being a bit of a golden hour song. Does the whole album kind of have that feel?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely varied, and he does a lot of different, you know, really interesting things with the kinds of rhythms he uses and the kinds of synth textures he uses. But there's definitely a pretty a common reference point throughout it of R&B and kind of good, strong pop melodies.
Yeah, it felt like a real 70s soul groove going there, and it was really fun. Next artist we're going to talk about goes by the moniker of Death Blues, which is kind of scarier looking than the music, really, or scarier sounding than the music is. But he was also a featured artist on NPR over the summer. Tell us about him.
So Death Blues is a project started by John Mueller, who is a drummer and a longtime experimental musician from Milwaukee. He's been in some really great bands. There was Pele and Collections of Colonies of Bees. And Death Blues is a project that he started to kind of explore this idea of being more present in the moment because life is finite. And it has a bunch of components beyond just the music, and he actually released two different Death Blues albums this year. One was called Nonfiction, and the one we're mostly focusing on here is called Ensemble. And it's probably one of the more accessible things that he's done in his solo career. He worked with a multi-instrumentalist named William Ryan Fritsch, and they created this very sort of big, sort of unabashedly emotional album. There's a lot of hammered acoustic guitars, which is an interesting sound, and woodwinds and strings. A lot of his solo stuff has involved this very demanding solo percussion stuff. What he'll play for, seeing him live is incredible when he does a solo show. He'll play for half hour, 45 minutes at a stretch of this really demanding drum stuff with some other things that he adds in. So it's really quite an experience. But it's interesting to hear something from him that's more maximal and orchestrated.
All right, let's give it a listen. This is Death Blues, and the song is called Reentry. You know, I listened to almost this entire album, and if you listen to it in its entirety, it almost has a soundtracky feel to it.
Yeah, it's definitely a big, epic instrumental album, and you know, it's like I was saying, it's kind of not afraid to go for those big emotions, but mm-hmm. it's still really complex and nuanced, and really it just really keeps kind of growing with you on repeat listens.
So what kind of ties does Death Blues have with Wisconsin still? I know all these artists are Wisconsin artists, but how much do they actually play and perform here?
You know, quite a lot. I've seen John Mueller play shows here in Madison many times, and I mean, he's been in Milwaukee for a long time. I'm not sure if he's from there, but he's been making music there for ages. And he's also, you know, he's also part of Volcano Choir, which is a band with Justin Vernon and some other musicians from Madison and Milwaukee. And you know, he just brings and ties together this more experimental, explorative aspect of the music here, which I think is often overlooked, but also really great.
Yeah, real soundscape in that one. It's fun to listen to all the different textures going on. Well, we've got our next one next. It's a band called Trin Tran. What do we know about Trin Tran?
So Trin Tran is a guy from Madison named Steve Coombs, and for a lot of years he's done this project as basically a one-man band where he'll be playing all the drums and synths and guitar and doing all the vocals by himself. Lately, he's kind of built out more of a full band lineup. And this year he released an EP called Far Reaches, and it's actually on a really great label from the Bay Area called Castle Face Records. And it's very much kind of in line with the sound that he's had over the years, where it's a very kind of twitchy post-punk, but also has a great sense of melody and a bunch of, you know, fun little synth phrases going on. You know, he actually writes really catchy songs. They're just delivered in kind of a weird way.
In fact, the comment I had, I listened to him a bit too. He's got hooks all over the place in all these songs.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It kind of, a lot of his stuff will throw you for a loop, because it'll come in, you'll hear this kind of staccato rhythm and these sort of crazy, like, mm-hmm. demented-sounding vocals that Steve has, and then he'll throw in this great, like, almost like Kraftwerk-sounding or something synth hook that's just really, it's just really nice and euphoric. So there's definitely these kind of contrasting feelings going on in that music.
Well, let's check out one of Trin Tran's songs. This is Hearts Are Serious.
And his heart's so serious. And the cans and drums and cups. Race the string and strut. As it comes, I'm getting old. Like a pansy on the rose.
Oh,
Gene
boy.
Purcell rocking out in his mellow way to Trin Tran.
Well,
I see you like this one.
I'm hearing Kraftwerk. I'm hearing Talking Heads. I'm hearing Men Without Hats. Mm-hmm. If you go back that far, there's a lot of stuff in here.
Devo, I think Devo.
Yeah,
oh,
Devo's
yeah.
definitely,
yeah, yeah.
absolutely. So what kind of variety is on this album? Because this one's got a lot packed into one song. What's the rest of it like?
Yeah, and the EP is just, it's just six songs, but there's a little more variety. There's a song called Your World that's a lot more somber and pretty and sparse, you know, and some of the songs are a bit more harsh sounding than the one we just heard. I think, you know, the song Far Reaches and the opening track Fashion Has Happened to Fashion, there, those are a little more rhythmic and abrasive, but even then you still get these keyboard hooks thrown in that just make it really fun.
So even though it had all those older bands we were referencing, Men at Work and Devo and Kraftwerk, is this something the youth are still listening to? Is it
sure,
new
yeah.
again?
I mean, when I go see Trin Tran play at shows in Madison, there are lots of younger people there. He actually has a teenage son who plays in his band, and I mean, he's probably in his 30s or 40s, but there are a lot of younger people who appreciate what he's doing. You know, actually, there's a musician from the Bay Area named Ty Segall who put out a collection of his old CDRs, and Ty Segall is probably like 25 or 26. He's kind of like this whiz kid. So it definitely cuts across generations here, and that's something that's kind of nice about being in a smaller community.
Right, exactly. And you like that one, Gene, so we'll see you grooving out at one of these one of these days.
I like it very much. You never know where you're going to find me.
It's true. We're going to go on to another one, and this one is a song called Wheel by a Madison band called Building on Buildings, and this is a couple of women who have a very collaborative process as they work together. Tell us about these guys.
Right, so the band started with two musicians from Madison, Connie Ward and Aaron Fuller, who both play guitar and sing in the band. And over time, it sort of developed into more of a cohesive five-piece band, and that's what you hear on the album that they put out this year. And it's just a self-titled album. And so you get a lot of this kind of warm guitar-driven music, but there's also little hints of electronic stuff thrown in there. You know, they have a really good drummer who's been played all kinds of different music. And so you hear a lot of variety on this album. And, you know, I mean, there's a lot of sort of mild-mannered indie rock out there right now, and it's a very fashionable thing, but I think they find a lot of depth to it. And you can kind of, it's very much music that is sort of about, you know, being in your 30s and dealing with a lot of adult things. So it's accessible and not necessarily like threatening or anything, but you hear this sort of this hard-bitten side to it, you know, and sort of there's a lot of kind of weariness under it that I think comes through really vividly.
Okay, well, here's a bit of Wheel. Of Wheel there. Yeah, that's a nice sound, and you can see that it would be something you could hear, you know, if you were in a mellow mood walking down the street on a rainy day. And lots of different people would be appealed, would see the appeal to music like that, I think. How are they doing in terms of catching on?
They seem to be doing pretty well locally. You know, they've gotten to play some cool shows. Actually, just last night I saw them open for the Sea and Cake here in Madison, and the Sea and Cake are, you know, really popular and long-running beloved indie rock band, so that was really cool. And they actually had a show recently where they were on the same bill with Field Report. So and they have a couple of shows coming up elsewhere in Wisconsin, I believe. They have one listed. They're doing the Live and Local on WMSE on January 27th, and they're playing in Nina on January 30th. So it sounds like they'll maybe be getting, you know, playing some more shows out of town and stuff like that.
Well, we're kind of running out of time here, and we didn't get to some of the bands we wanted to get to. But before we let you go, I wanted to ask, you know, music kind of ebbs and flows in terms of quality. And how would you sum up 2014 in terms of Wisconsin music? Was it a good year, a great year, an average year? What?
Well, I think it's been a good year. And it certainly is a little different every year. And there's sort of this, I don't know, music here to me is sort of this big jumble with all these weird little pockets to it, and it's not necessarily a cohesive thing. I mean, you have, you know, really successful, more accessible bands like Fox, but you also have, you know, these awesome metal bands coming out of Milwaukee like Protestant and Enabler, then, and they do really well too. But of course, those are such different worlds. So, I would say it's been probably good and above average. I mean, just doing a list of Madison albums, I had a hard time narrowing it down to 20 things that I thought were really, you know, important to put in that kind of top 20 list. So by that measure, I think it's definitely been an above average year, and it's always diverse. It's always surprising.
Well, that's cool. We'll look ahead to 2015.
Well, Scott, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate you coming by and sharing music with us.
Well, thank you.
We've been talking to Scott Gordon, editor of the music and arts blog, ToneMadison.com.